He's the fine sports journo. He's an anchor, reporter, KVAL, KMTR here in town. Born and raised in the ATL. He's a USC grad. But he's here right now on Twitter. You could use the handle at TrevorDenton37. Trevor, always appreciate the time. How's life going for you here in mid-February?
Great, Steve. Chilling right now. Obviously enjoying basketball season, everything the Pac-12 has to offer. Very interesting race happening there. And also getting excited for baseball season right now with Oregon and Oregon State. Doing some previewing there. Excited for that on Friday. So kind of that exciting time of the year when the basketball and baseball seasons kind of cross over. And then before you know it, we'll be in spring practice. So it feels like football season never ends as well. So always an exciting time of the year. Doing great right now.
Yeah, spring. Who knew when it was snowing 48 hours ago? But anyway, football. You hail from Atlanta. You mentioned before you went to a ton of Georgia games, SEC games. And, of course, in 2021, Georgia wins that national title. Then they follow up. Very dramatic, the playoff win against Ohio State. then the demolition of TCU. The first team to repeat in the playoff age. So you know this program well. They're kind of in your DNA, if you will. How impressive by your Bulldogs to win back-to-back?
It's crazy. I just think growing up, I think, you know, when you're in the middle of a dynasty forming, you start to take it for granted and already there's fatigue on Georgia again. But growing up, you know, the Bulldogs were not the top team. They were not that top team. They were consistently stuck at 9-3. Could never get over that Alabama hump. 7 losses to them in a row. And I think as a fan base, we were like, we're cursed. You know, no matter what we do, whether we have A.J. Green or No. Sean Marino or Todd Gurley and Keith Marshall toting the rock, we just cannot get over this Alabama hump. So to see it happen and then, you know, repeat, takes some getting used to being the top dog. I think Alabama's still lurking around. You can't write them off. And, of course, they just beat Georgia in the SEC title just one season ago. But it's crazy to kind of be in the midst of it and seeing what Kirby Smart is building, especially there were a lot of question marks around him, too, early in his tenure. Some questionable decisions, having Justin Fields out there on a fake punt or going for a fake kick against Joe Burrow and LSU. There were a lot of questions about his game management, his handling of the quarterbacks. But now it's safe to say the fan base, including me, fully trusts that man, Kirby Smart, and the decisions that he's making. So it's crazy to see the juggernaut they become after growing up and them not always being the most consistent team, kind of being right on the doorstep but never quite there. Now it's safe to say they're well over that hump.
I would defy anybody to tell me the last time they even thought about No. Sean Marino. So well done there.
Oh, I will never forget about No. Sean Marino. He hurdled a guy against Central Michigan, another hurdle against Arizona State. For anyone out there, watch those No. Sean Marino highlights. That guy was an absolute stud for sure. Always will shout him out.
Love it. Let's get to Oregon football, who, ironically, got demolished by Georgia to start the season. They rebounded. They were kind of in the playoff picture. That ended. The gut punch losses to two arch enemies. You know, the Bo Nix injury, the Utah win. A lot went into this season, which ended in dramatic fashion at the Holiday Bowl. When you think of year one under Dan Lanning, you know, from excitement to near misses, you know, what's your evaluation? What kind of sticks out?
You know, I think what sticks out is I think Dan Lanning lived up to expectations. I don't know if the team necessarily blew them out of the water or anything. It looked like they might be when they were on that streak you mentioned and that UCLA win, and they were in the thick of the playoff hunt. But I think he very much held serve. I think at the beginning of the year, 9-3 was kind of what I expected. You know, there were some holes on the roster that he inherited. There were also some incredible strengths, like the offensive line he inherited and the development that Cristobal and Mirabal were able to have on that group was there, and that was evident throughout the year. But there were also some holes, the defensive backs, some defensive issues. So I think that the team definitely achieved. I think he held serve. And I think, you know, Dan Lanning definitely didn't disappoint. Now, obviously, you want to beat your rivals. Those were tough losses to Oregon State and Washington, kind of in that second half of the season. But I think overall, fans should definitely be excited about the offense right now. And Bo Nix coming back and the way they were able to pound the rock. Some linemen getting experience that are going to be back. Josh Connerly, I think, is going to be a huge part of the team next year, and guys like that. But you know, I think the key for year two is going to be obviously improving on the defensive front. Adding depth there, which they did through the portal, and then fixing some of the issues on the back end so you don't have Michael Penix throwing for 600 yards or whatever it felt like in that game. But, yeah, I think that's kind of how I view the Dan Lanning tenure. I think it would have been a lot different if they were able to close out that game against Oregon State and you're 10-2, 11-2 with a win in the bowl game. But I think he definitely held serve. He lived up to expectations. Didn't necessarily shatter them out of the water because it was a talented team, but he also didn't disappoint. It wasn't a dud of a debut season. I mean, you know, Mario Cristobal, not to bring up that comparison, but he obviously, you know, they were listed as an ACC contender that year. That was a disappointment of a year. Dan Lanning, I would not call that year a disappointment. I would say he very much held serve and did what he needed to do and did enough to create excitement and buzz around his program, which obviously parlayed very well into this recruiting class.
Talking with Trevor Denton, KVAL-TV. So I've been here 33 years, and I remember the great teams, Joey Harrington, Chip Kelly. We did not talk a lot about recruiting. We really have since Willie Taggart. You were on top of this. You noted when they landed Jordan Birch, all the recruiting scores, which culminated with Roderick Pleasant. So I don't have tell somebody from SEC country how serious folks can be about recruiting. What about the Ducks going out on the trail and landing a top 10 class?
It's funny how, you know, you check the temperature of the fan base and it's so different. It's almost like the weather right now. It's so different from day to day because I think after the Dante Moore decommitment and his decision to go to UCLA, there was a lot of panic. If you were to go on Oregon Twitter or dare go on an Oregon Twitter space, not a pretty pleasant place to be during that day or two. But, you know, I kind of thought, you know, I'm like, man, if they turn around on signing day and land guys like Mateo Uiagalelei and Dalen Austin and Jade Lamar, you know, the temperature is going to change around pretty quick. And I think they did that. I think on signing day, they came, they saw, they conquered. They flipped a lot of guys that were 50-50. They flipped guys that were committed to other programs for a while. And then they got that quarterback replacement, Austin Novosad. Now, don't get me wrong, Dante Moore, I think, is an incredible player. I was talking to his coach, Tyrone Spencer, in the summer about what made him stand out, his poise, his arm talent, just his ability to lead that team over there in Detroit, Martin Luther King, to the back-to-back state titles, and also started varsity as a freshman. So he's a special player, don't get me wrong, but just the ability to come in that morning and flip Novosad on a dime, you know, when he had been committed to Baylor for like a year, that was impressive. That showed a lot of, you know, ability to deal with adversity and kind of improvise on the spot. And I think Dan Lanning definitely is bringing in that SEC mentality to Oregon that Cristobal also had as well. But they understand that recruiting is the lifeblood to this entire thing. They're going to emphasize it through NIL. And also through the portal, I think, you know, some of the most important additions they made last year were through the portal, guys like Chase Cota, obviously Bo Nix. But I think some of the defensive additions they made this year are going to be the difference for this team, going to be the X factor. I think Jordan Birch, who you brought up out of South Carolina, man, that guy's a dog. Ignore the sack totals. He's involved in so many plays at the line of scrimmage. I think he's the most important one. But when I've been talking to staffers and stuff, they're the highest on these DBs they're bringing in. And we talked about how that was a weakness. And now you're losing Christian Gonzalez, who's a lock to be a first-round pick. But this staff is really high on Evan Williams, Bennett Williams' his younger brother, as a cover safety. They're really high on Tysheem Johnson out of Ole Miss. And then, of course, the guy they got out of Alabama as well, Kyrie Jackson, they feel is a lockdown guy, 6'3", 197. They think he's going to fill that role that Christian Gonzalez did of a big outside cornerback that can compete with the big, tall receivers and also be able to run with them. So always factor in the transfer portal. But I think this class, it accomplished a lot. Losing Dante Moore was not ideal. But I think they got better on the line of scrimmage. They added depth there, and they closed out very strong, which I think will be – it's a trademark of Kirby Smart, and I think Dan Lanning is definitely bringing that DNA to Eugene.
I want to get to Oregon State, and before we get into the specifics of their great season, obviously everybody witnessed the DeMar Hamlin scare on Monday Night Football, and I thought you at KVAL, you guys really hit the poignancy story on the head. You got to speak with Dr. Doug Aukerman, who oversees all things medical for Oregon State Athletics. So for those who missed it, what did he have to say about how prepared they are, maybe what they do during each offseason, and how, you know, CPR training for many, many more, suddenly you realize it's a pretty great idea?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, I was very grateful to have the opportunity to speak with him. Landing that interview was really, really huge, because I wanted to hear from him and hear about their preparedness. And they were very open and willing to talk. And, you know, a key point that I made on the air is, you know, as fans, it's something we never have anticipated. I mean, so many people, even people that have been around the sport for decades, and never thought about something like that, a cardiac arrest on the football field. We know about concussions. We're familiar with spinal injuries. We've seen that a million times, but something like cardiac arrest is something we don't think about, but it is something that they think about. And he went through with me how every off season they practice with a dummy. They practice for things like cardiac arrest, spinal injuries, brain injuries, and they're prepared for those kind of scenarios. So basically in the off season, you know, they go on the field and they go through the entire thing with a dummy, or sometimes even, a player, like a real life person, you know, cause you got to prepare for, you know, say a big D lineman. Like, those are all different situations that they have to be ready for, and they take videos of it and they study it. And it really reminded me of how a team practices in the off season. They do the same thing, and they drive to the hospital. They make sure that route is done. And so he told me, you know, in these situations that, you know, you always want to look back at your protocols, but he seemed to feel very comfortable with what they have in place. Another thing that stood out to me that I definitely was not aware of or had never thought of, is that every coach on the staff, down to Jonathan Smith, the position coaches, to assistants, you know, they all have to be CPR trained. And that gives you kind of a peace of mind when you see a situation like this, when you know that, okay, if that were to happen, you know, the running backs coach, if he's the closest person there and needs to do it, you know, he can. So very interesting talking to him. And another thing that he stressed is just the importance of, you know, he felt like they were ready, but at the high school level, even at the middle school level, that, you know, athletic trainers at these events and practices, they really need to be sure to be trained in CPR, because you just never know what can happen. And as we know, you know, that was the difference for Damar Hamlin between living and dying, was the quick response and the quick work of athletic trainers out there in Cincinnati. So very illuminating conversation with him. Very grateful I got to talk to him. And it's fascinating all that goes into it. You know, we're used to watching football practices, but we don't think about stuff like that. But it seems like, you know, college teams are very, very prepared for that type of scenario.
No, it was enlightening. It was a terrific, terrific work. Couple final thoughts for Trevor Denton, KVAL. As for the football team, I think they were one of the great national success stories. You know, they had recently broken the bowl drought. Then this year they lost their quarterback early on. And, you know, Gulbranson played okay, not great. But that defense led by Trent Bray, just what Jonathan Smith has built. You know, you mentioned one of the Ui Ugaleles earlier. You throw in the transfer DJ. Just how are you liking these Beavs under the guidance of Coach Smith moving forward?
Yeah, I think the stock just continues to rise. I think you're starting to see that with recruiting. They brought in a good class, brought in two real blue chip players. Kelsey Howard's going to play right away on the defensive line. And then, of course, DJ coming in is huge. And with DJ coming in, it really, from the reporting of all of it and reading about it and hearing about it, he sought them out. You know, I mean, what does that mean, right? That a five-star guy out of St. John Bosco that was the heir apparent to Trevor Lawrence, the fact that right, this five-star guy sought out Jonathan Smith and that staff tells you everything you need to know about where this program is at. That's not something that was happening. And I have questions about DJU, and I think he struggled at times in that Clemson offense. But I think that the bottom line is you're going to see such a difference on the field. I think watching practice, we're going to see the ball pop out at a different velocity than we've seen from an Oregon State quarterback maybe since Sean Mannion. So I think he's a signal of where this program is headed right now. Also bringing in Aiden Childs, four-star quarterback that I'm very excited to watch in the spring. So, yeah, obviously they're in a great spot. Now, I think the biggest question mark I actually have for this team is the loss of Omar Spates. I mean, he was the field general in the middle, the guy that got everybody lined up and in the right spot, and just such a sure tackler and such a such a sound, fundamental player that's always in the right spot. So there's kind of two ways you can look at that, right? It's like, man, Oregon State developed a guy that then went on to LSU. Like, what does that say about Trent Bray's development? But then also there's the downside of, like, well, how much is this going to happen where we're developing guys? Are we a feeder program now where we're developing guys? Well, now, luckily for them, this isn't something that's been a huge pattern. This is kind of one of the first times. And we've had guys like Damian Martinez vehemently go on Twitter and be like, I'm not going anywhere, you know. Forget the rumors. Like, I'm staying in Corvallis. So I think that was kind of a mixed bag. But I think that's going to be one of the biggest questions for me is how they replace a guy like that. I'm not really worried about their secondary. I think their D-line might have even gotten better with the addition of Howard and also James Rawls returning. But how are they going to replace that quarterback in the middle? They got their quarterback from Clemson, but who's going to be that guy in the middle? But it is a testament that they developed a guy that ultimately went on to play in the SEC, a guy that wasn't heavily recruited out of Crescent Valley is now going to be lining up in Death Valley. You know, pretty crazy to see where this Oregon State program is at right now compared to where things were when Jonathan Smith arrived.
And the last thing I want to get to is, let's call it somewhat of an opinion piece on your alma mater. USC, of course, was on the brink of huge things. Then they gave up 47 points to Utah, 46 to Tulane. Then earlier, 43 in the first meeting with the Utes, 45 to UCLA. Lincoln Riley decided to keep defensive coordinator Alex Grinch. From your chair or maybe the Trojan alum you've heard from, evaluate. Folks okay with him sticking with Grinch?
Well, no. I think there was a little bit of anger. And I was, I was definitely questioning the decision a little bit early on. But then you take a chance to step back and breathe a little bit. And you kind of realize what he inherited and you know, there's a 270-pound nose tackle starting the entire season. Like, the D-line was getting pushed around, and that is not something that you can replace in one offseason. You can get receivers. You can get a quarterback. You can get Caleb Williams. You can maybe get a couple of really, really good defensive backs, you know, Mekhi Blackman from Colorado. The one thing you can't do in the portal is create defensive line depth. Like, that is developed through time, through the weight room, through layering multiple recruiting classes, and that was the thing they lacked. So I think what Lincoln Riley did was he took a long look at it, and you know, with his relationship with Alex Grinch, he wasn't going to make a brash decision before believing like he had the chance to work with the talent. So I think what I'm hearing, what we're going to see, is Lincoln Riley a lot more involved in that side of the ball. I think he was doing a lot of administration stuff. Antonio Morales, great reporting on this for The Athletic, but I think he was more focused on the culture and what you needed a lot of changing in the weight room and big picture CEO stuff. I think he's going to be a lot more heavily involved in those defensive meeting rooms. Now, I was actually less concerned about that Tulane game because I think that a version of that game had happened five or six times. They let Colorado get back in it. They let Arizona State get back in it. I think Tulane was kind of just like the one that was good enough to actually complete the entire comeback. I was actually more alarmed by the recruiting class coming in at kind of 12th, and we thought maybe top five was possible, and the lack of D linemen. But then, you know, for the second year in a row, Lincoln Riley got to work in the portal, and they did actually get some good defensive line and linebacker additions to kind of bolster that front seven. So I definitely have my concerns about Grinch, but I do ultimately think it was the right move to give him a chance with a replenished D line because what he inherited, it's like the opposite, right, of like what I said about Dan Lanning inheriting Mario Cristobal's offensive line. Like, Lincoln Riley inheriting the defensive line that he got and the undersize and just some of the lack of talent there, I think is reasonable. And then you can make a better evaluation about it next year.
Folks, that's an awful lot of really good information. He's Trevor Denton, another of the outstanding young sports journalists we are fortunate to have here in our market. Does an awesome job as an anchor and reporter, KVAL, KMTR. Seriously, follow along. Well, you could catch him on TV, online, on Twitter. It's at Trevor Denton 37. TD, really great stuff. Really appreciate the time. Be well. And as always, look forward to catching up soon.
Thanks so much for having me, Steve. Hope it wasn't too many words. I'm a little out of breath over here.
Awesome.
I need to get some water. Appreciate you, Steve.
Go have a drink. You go have a drink. The choice is yours. And thanks a lot, TD. Appreciate it. Take it
easy. Thanks so much.
There you go.